Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
In all of us, there is the great possibility for good and for evil. Who is a hero? We don't know it. If you ask the people who have saved my life, people who have been, in my eyes, definitely heroes, who risked their life, if you ask them, why did you do it? They say, well, we couldn't do anything else. They knew the risks they were taking.
I want to reclaim the non-telegenic, non-extraordinary, unspectacular, small-C courage and bring it back into our daily life, because I think the way we live is very much tied in with the question of courage. When we grow up as children, when we immigrate, when we allow ourselves to fall madly in love, you know, when we stand up for our beliefs, you know, all these simple and mundane, ordinary things, they are things that we can do with courage or we can do without courage.
Natasha Mitchell joining you for All in the Mind on ABC Radio National. Welcome. Call it what you will. Guts, grit, spine, heart, verve, or simply courage. That state of mind that compels us to act despite the risks, not always for honourable purposes, it should be said, but to be brave and leap into the unknown, whatever comes. My two guests today have this trait in spades. From a Russian Jewish family, Dr. Maria Tamarkin immigrated to Australia as a teenager in the 1980s. Following her first book, Traumascapes, her new title, Courage, unearths courage in the crevices of everyday life. Maria's defiantly not interested in popular heroes, as you'll hear. Successful Australian businesswoman Sabina Wolanski, now 80, was just 12 when her village in Poland was invaded by the Nazis. Her mother was taken to the gas chambers, her father and brother were executed in a labour camp. She survived, despite the odds, and went on to become the sole Holocaust survivor to speak at the opening of the controversial memorial to the murdered Jews of Europe in Berlin a couple of years ago. And Maria and Sabina join me and you today from the floor of the recent Sydney Writers Festival to discuss their new biographies on matters most courageous. Thank you very much for joining me on the stage at the festival. Look, speaking of courage, Sabina, can I just ask what that experience was like, giving that address to the opening of the memorial in Berlin? You were representing all Holocaust survivors.
For me, a little girl from a tiny town in Borislav, which had about 45,000 people, finding myself in Berlin in the presence of all those people, it was something extraordinary. But as I was standing there, I went back in my memory to my parents, to my home, to my hometown. And I think that I was addressing all the other people, all the survivors, and all the people who were not there anymore. So it was an extraordinary experience.
You did receive some criticism, didn't you, for giving that presentation? In a sense, there was a sense that you were giving absolution to the German nation.
I knew beforehand there are people who have a totally different view. I had thought about it a long time and decided that I have to be absolutely truthful, and this is what I'm going to say, and I have to give my view. Even today, I know that there are people who happen to think differently. So yes, there was some criticism, but we have to be prepared for it. Maybe it's part of the courage to know that nobody, everyone is going to agree with you.
Maria, ever since your early adolescence, you suggest you've been obsessed with the question of courage. Why obsessed?
Yes, obsessed sounds like a strong word. And I do write in the book that I was, and to a degree still am, prepared to give up a lot of things. Intelligence and kindness and talent and all those things for the attribute of courage. I don't know why courage always spoke to me. Maybe because of the country where I was born, maybe because of my kind of internal structure of my soul. And I've tried, you know, I'm a grown woman now. I mean, it's, you know, obsessions. We have to temper our obsessions. But underneath all that, I think it's still very much alive, that kind of passionate engagement and passionate desire not to be a chicken, not to be a coward, you know.
And yet you're not remotely interested in heroes in this book. In fact, you're actively disinterested in heroes.
I am actively disinterested in heroes. And in as much as this book is a very intensely personal look at courage, I do make a point early on that I would like to disentangle, you know, ideas around courage from ideas about heroism. Because to me, heroism is something extraordinary and something that most people cannot relate to in terms of their everyday life. And I'm interested in the place that courage has in the life of mere mortals, in our daily life, in Monday to Friday.
You do go one step further, though. You actually say that popular notions of heroism are lazy and confused.
I think so. I think that I had a real issue with the way that, with all due respect, the death of Steve Irwin kind of was used to turn Steve Irwin into a national hero.
God.
And a god, yes, and an object of worship. And in as much as I have respect and obviously felt for his family and so forth, I thought that this was a lazy and confused way of looking at the life of a man, a deserving man, but certainly not a hero. Mm. And I think it suggested something, not about him, but about our public culture, that we needed to latch on to this idea of heroism in order to deal with Steve Irwin's death.
Mm. Maria and I have never met before. I feel that I have known her for such a long time because I can identify with so many parts of her life. And speaking about bringing this courage into the ordinary life, first of all, I don't have a definition of courage. What is courage?
Different. What is courage? I mean, when we look at your story is in fact full of heroes who wouldn't have ever thought of themselves as heroes, but your life was saved over and over again by many people.
Absolutely. Heroes are not made in advance. It depends on situation and in all of us, there is the great possibility for good and for evil. Who is a hero? We don't know it. If you ask the people who have saved my life, people who have been, in my eyes, definitely heroes, who risked their life, if you ask them, why did you do it? They say, well, we couldn't do anything else.
Let's give people, Sabina, a sense of your story and why at the end of World War II you found yourself with no family left. When, as a 12-year-old, did you, in your child's mind, first really get a sense of something being terribly, terribly wrong?
Well, I was brought up by a most wonderful, wonderful mother who was so far ahead of her times. And one of the things that she always taught me is that we are all equal. So when the Nazis came and the first pogrom happened, I was bewildered is not the word to describe it. Because on the eyes of the 12-year-old child, the horrible crimes, the murders, the rape, the horror which delivered, I couldn't understand why did people suddenly behave in such a way. And up till today, we see what's happening. We saw what happened in Rwanda, in all the countries, and it is beyond our comprehension.
Your story is pieced together from diaries that you managed to save. I mean, these were diaries that you were writing from your early teens, and somehow they stayed with you when very little else did. Let's give people a sense of the diaries. And
would you like me to read something?
Let's do a reading. Perhaps give us a context, because this is sort of fast-forwarding ahead a bit, isn't it?
Yes, quite a lot. Well, we were occupied by Nazis from 1941 to 1944, and I always wanted to write. So whenever I had an opportunity, I wrote, and I carried it in my rucksack. It was dangerous. If anybody would have found it, was instant danger and death. But anyhow, I saved some of them. And that part is starts about 1943. I just turned 16. The Germans had been occupying our part of Poland for more than 2 years. I had lost my mother. Many of my friends were already dead. My brother and my father were slave laborers. I had somehow managed to survive a pogrom, 6 major deportations, mass shooting, discovery in a bunker, and a deadly contagious disease. And yet, I never made any particular effort to save myself. I was unbelievably placid. I allowed myself to be taken care of. Here is what I wrote on that day. Already a year had gone by since my mother was taken away. I've been looking through my old diaries, and I can't believe how much I have changed. I think that I have grown up a lot. It looks like I have started to know myself. There are so many sides to me. Sometimes I'm so naive, like a small child. I get angry easily, and sometimes there is a little woman growing up. But I don't really know myself very well. Goethe said, to know yourself is to be great. I did have a very nice diary, but I had to throw it away in the toilet when we were discovered. Today, there was a roll call in the camp. It looks more or less like that. Approximately 1,100 people. Sorry, I shouldn't have said people. It's an old habit. I should have said 1,100 slaves standing and waiting. Suddenly there is a movement. He's coming. Everybody stands to attention. They are coming. Two ruffians, drunk, hardly upright, horrible faces, and the slaves are standing to attention. Finally, the order is given. You can go. God, how is it possible that one can treat people in such a terrible way, to humiliate them? Will it ever be possible to take revenge for what has happened? Perhaps some people will take individual vengeance, but I don't think we will be able to avenge the shame they have put us through. Mama, it is so painful, and it gets worse and worse. It's 1 year since you have been taken away, and how can I believe in God? I look at Josik, my brother, and my heart is breaking. I love him so much. He is my dearest one. He is suffering so badly. I can't write anymore. I don't know whether it gives you any kind of feeling what it was like, but I have to remember that I was 16-year-old when I was writing that.
You were 16, so how was it as an adult, looking back over those diaries that you managed to save, and particularly looking at your teenage reactions to your relationships to your parents whilst they were still alive and your brother, before all this had happened?
Well, before it was happening, I was, in one way I was very grown up, but in another way I was very naive. I've loved my brother very much, and it was extremely, extremely painful. Also to see my father, who was normally quite a despot, really, to see him as a totally broken man. So there was an incredible compassion even then as a small child. And at the same time, an incredible pain, understanding that they who wanted to protect us so much couldn't do very much.
Sabina Wolanski, whose new book, Destined to Live, tells her story of surviving the Nazi Holocaust after the rest of her family was murdered, and the new and passionate life she discovered in Australia after arriving in her early 20s. Courage is our theme for the moment on All in the Mind on ABC Radio National with me, Natasha Mitchell, beaming globally on Radio Australia online and as podcast. And we're joined also by Maria Tamarkin, whose new book is an autobiographical and philosophical exploration of courage, a theme she says is possibly the most enduring theme in literature, next to love, of course. Maria, you didn't start out writing an autobiographical story, but it became autobiographical. Why?
Yes, I started out writing a sort of literary non-fiction book on courage. And I spent almost a year writing about other people's thoughts and experiences of courage, and it all felt completely wrong. And I, while the fear of being self-indulgent making it all about myself was always there, and it's still unresolved. I still have that question of whether there's too much of me in this book and whether that, you know, makes it a weaker book in a sense. At the same time, I just couldn't write a safe book about courage. It seemed like a real cop-out.
I love how you say writing about courage as an interested observer only felt like driving a car in a clown suit.
It's actually driving a car in a clown suit is actually a quote from Dave Eggers from his book Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius.
I mean, you've woven the great philosophers in with stories about living with a flatmate who was a Russian stripper, or living in Townsville on your own with an infant daughter in a big Queenslander next to a rambunctious family. And I mean,
and running half naked.
And running half naked.
So you had to mention that, of course. One time I got running half naked.
But I think this book is a gift in that way, that you work at so many different levels. Why don't we introduce Bella? Because she really is the foundation stone. And perhaps we'll do a reading.
I was in a takeaway coffee queue in Melbourne, just behind a woman by the name of Bella, a Russian Jew like myself, who has sold me fruit and veg ever since my daughter was the size of a Lebanese cucumber. Up close, I could see her light grey moustache. Mine is black like Frida Kahlo's. Her hair ravaged by bleach and a flock of crowns framing her mouth. We talked about children and the weather, but the coffee was still not coming. And then, as the conversation was about to die down, I felt something, a little splash, an intimation of a story. By that time, we had our coffee in our hands. Belle and a group of her relatives and friends, including several young kids, her grandchildren, went to a Chinese restaurant to mark some kind of occasion. Not long into the evening, with the kids playing on one side of the restaurant and the adults easing their way into a meal on the other, men in balaclavas came in wielding knives and ordered all the patrons to get under the tables. All of this is happening in Melbourne. Yep. Most people in the restaurant obliged. Bella's table, on the other hand, didn't. Their children were on the opposite side of the restaurant, so it was all primal instincts from there. The entire table went into the counter-assault mode. Bella's son-in-law and her husband ran across the restaurant tables and threw themselves on the men in balaclavas. Some people from one of the other tables joined in. The burglars were overwhelmed and had to flee. I asked who it was that had run towards the intruders. Bella said everyone at her table had. Did someone lead the charge? No. Did you exchange glances? Did you communicate? Did you agree tacitly on the course of action? No, there was no time. There was no need. We all just went for it, completely spontaneously. Only an old woman, someone's grandma, the memories of pogroms etched into her aging mind, screamed in Yiddish, "Leave them, don't touch them, they'll kill you." Bella, on the contrary, had this to say, "I have worked all week. I'm exhausted. There is no way I'm getting under the table. It's my day off." And most enjoyably, "What haven't I seen under the table? What great attraction is there for me?" She was not thin either, so getting down on all fours would surely have been a task and a half. I thanked Bella. You should have seen me. I kissed her on the cheek and said thank you half a dozen times. She was already walking away when she turned around and said, "Promise me you'll never get under the table." And I promised, feeling that my normal life was suspended for that moment, and that standing there with my takeaway coffee, I was all of a sudden in free fall. I'm sure there are millions of situations in our lives when we need to get under the table, where not getting under the table is no great virtue, but on the contrary, an expression of vanity or stupidity, or worse still, disregard for the lives of others. But I meant what I said, that I wanted to live my life above board.
Fantastic. It's a good story, isn't it? You're very tough on yourself in this book. You do expose yourself. There's a bit of self-loathing in the book too at times, isn't there? And, I mean, tell us about the relationship of courage to confronting self-loathing.
I think to me courage is absolutely essential in the project of self-knowledge. I think to me essentially courage is about confronting the rot within ourselves. It takes incredible courage to actually actively look for the truth within ourselves. And I quote one philosopher who says that morality and ethics, they're not sets of prescriptions or commandments. Moral life starts when we are free. And it is this search for my inner freedom, for who I am, for my sense of self, that sometimes is accompanied by self-loathing and sometimes is accompanied by genuine disgust. When I look at myself and think, you know, I stink in all sorts of ways. And I think that was the great liberation that came from writing something that was so autobiographical. I could never rape and pillage anyone else the way that I raped and pillaged myself, because with myself I could go further than with anyone else. And I wanted to write a kind of book that was a provocation to stir something. And it was not important for me to present a particular version of myself. I just wanted to be honest. And I think honesty is all you've got, really.
Sabina, this idea of holding on to yourself and confronting yourself, but also, I mean, you made the point, I think, about hanging on to the essence of yourself and that in itself being a courageous act. Yeah. And there's a story in your book. You've been taken from the bunker in which you were hiding by Ukrainian militia, and you're in jail, you're a teenager, and you're facing execution the next morning. Perhaps tell us that story, because there's something that you did then that I found very potent.
Yes, well, that was, we were discovered in a bunker where we were hiding, and we were protected there by a most wonderful man whose name was Mr. Machnitsky. And to me, he was a Pole. I did not know and did not discover until after the war that he actually, well, himself was Jewish, and speaking of courage in sheltering 8-9 other people, knowing extremely well the danger that he is in. Unfortunately, we were denounced by someone, I don't know who. Anyhow, we were discovered and taken by Ukrainian militia to the police station. The place where the dungeon was filthy, a horrible place. When I arrived in there, I discovered that one of the young militia men was someone I knew. He used to go to school with my brother, and came over and said to me, "I'm sorry, but I can't do very much for you. I can't help you." And I said, "Yes, there is something you can do for me. I would like you to bring me a pail of water and something to clean this place." He looked at me as I would have lost my mind. And he said, "What for?" I said, "Well, I'm going to clean it. I'm not going to live. I'm not going to stay in here, this place the way it is." He looked with kind of a pity on me, and he said, "Most probably you will all be killed tomorrow morning." I said to him, "Well, that's tomorrow. Today I am alive, I'm a human being, and I want to live like one." Much to my surprise, he did bring me some water and something to clean with, and a lot of straw, and I cleaned that place. While I was doing it, there were all militiamen looking through the window, probably thinking, "Crazy little girl." Now, I don't really am sure what I can call it, courage. I've mentioned before, I don't have a definition for it. I think it was something which I was brought up with, and that was my mother's upbringing. You are a decent human being. You can do anything you want to do, but you always have to live up to what you truly believe in. Well, maybe it's some form of courage to stand by what I believe. And this is what I did. Mm. The following morning, I went to sleep. I was young. I was tired. I went to sleep. I slept the night. Following morning, I woke up and found myself the only one in the cell. Well, again, what do we call it? Well, it's my destiny. Coincidence. I haven't solved those problems yet for me. I keep asking these questions. And I know something about courage is. I was just going to say, I'm 80, and to be able to speak up here openly about my age, that's courage.
Thanks, Sabina. Yes.
It's interesting that you identified this story, because when I was reading Sabina's book, that sentence that she said to that young militia boy, "Tomorrow is tomorrow, but today I will not live like a pig." Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it absolutely stayed with me. And I remember thinking, it doesn't explain, you know, why Sabina survived, but it explains how she survived. Mm-hmm. You know, if ever anything like that were to happen to me, in my obsession with courage, this is the kind of person I would have liked to have been. And I remember going to Bosnia, to Sarajevo, a number of years ago, and in fact reading about women who, during the siege of Sarajevo and during the war, continued to wash their hair and put makeup on and behave with great decency and look beautiful. beautiful, absolute defiance in the face of all the attempts to dehumanize. I would say that if there is a definition of courage, that would be it.
And I really would love to get you to talk about this wonderful complex relationship between cowardice, confessions and courage. I just found that part of your book quite phenomenal. But Sabina, tell me about your friend Renata and what that relationship has given to you, because you both had to confront your stories.
Very briefly, I was a witness. The man who gave order to kill my brother and my father and a friend of my brother's was caught and brought to justice in Bremen in Germany, and I was a witness for the prosecution. Whilst I was there, there was a woman, a German woman, who approached me after the hearing and asked me that she would like to help me and to take me to chemist because she could notice that I was in pain, which I was. I had apparently appeared very collected and very much peaceful on the outside, but everything happens in my stomach. I answered her that I don't want to talk to anybody. I thought that she was a journalist. She wasn't. She says, no, I don't want you to talk to me. I just want you to help because I can see that you are really in pain. And from that developed an incredible relationship. Renata is German. Her father was a Nazi, a Gestapo man, who was brought to justice and sentenced to a life sentence. And Renata and I started talking about it. I have always been preoccupied with the question of guilt, as you are, justice, courage. And I couldn't solve that problem for myself about guilt. I had problems with Germany and with Germans and with the language. And it was Renata. Through Renata and our friendship, I understood, and I'm not the only one. I quoted Elie Wiesel, a very famous writer, an incredible man, saying that the children of the murderers are not guilty for what their fathers did, and they cannot be blamed for it. They are responsible for what happens to the memory of these things, but they are not responsible for the crimes committed by the others.
Maria, tell me about where love fits into all of this, because I think this is very relevant. Mm. Love and courage is a big theme in your book.
To me, nothing requires more courage than the openness to love, to giving love and receiving love in the face of all that we know about betrayal and pain and deaths of the ones we love and grief that never goes away. And it is very scary to love. I don't know that there is anything scary in this life. Mm. And it requires incredible courage. Yet, and this is the point, you know, we all love and courage is with us in everyday life. It's not a construct, it's not a virtue, it's not inaccessible. You know, in ancient Greece, courage was the first virtue, not the most important, but the most fundamental, because it allowed all other virtues to thrive. And I think, in a sense, courage is the underpinning of love, and love is the underpinning of life.
I do thank you, and I do thank Sabina and Maria very much. Conversation recorded at the 2008 Sydney Writers Festival recently, and Maria Tamarkin's book Courage, with the great subtitle of Guts, Grit, Spine, Heart, Balls, Verve, is published by Melbourne University Press. Sabina Wielanski's powerful autobiography, full of her unbelievable teenage diaries from the Holocaust, is called Destined to Live, One Woman's War, Life, Love's Remembered, which she wrote with Diana Bagnall, and it's published by HarperCollins. More info on All in the Mind's website, which is where to listen or download 4 weeks of the show's audio, or read the transcripts online, abc.net.au/rn/allinthemind. And you can get to my All in the Mind blog from there too, a place for your comments and mine on more matters of the psyche. Thanks today to engineer Tim Nicastri, producer Anita Barrow, studio engineer Kerry Dell, and to the Sydney Writers Festival. I'm Natasha Mitchell. Be courageous. Thank you.
listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.